ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد. Then to continue with the explanation of Lum'atul Ittiqad, the Book of Creed of the great Imam Ibn Qudamah al-Maqdisi rahimahullah, with the explanation of Shaykh Salih al-Fawzan hafidhahullah. Then last week we had a quote and a mention of a debate which took place from one of the scholars of the past, Muhammad ibn Abdul Rahman al-Adrami. And who can mention, we've got the questions of what came in the explanation, who can mention where the Shaykh Muhammad ibn Abdul Rahman al-Adrami, where he came from? Where did he come from?
A place called Aden in Turkey.
A place, Adana, in southern Turkey, on the southern coast of Turkey. Who can mention who was the person he debated with or debated against? Who did he debate against? Wasn't mentioned in the text, but in the explanation he was named. No. Ibn Abi Duwad. No. And who can remember the topic of the debate? The debate was with regard to an innovation. Who can remember this innovation?
That the Qur'an was created.
Yeah. The innovation, the evil innovation of the saying that the Qur'an is created. And who can remember, Shaykh al-Fawzan mentioned one of the deviant sects as being responsible for this innovation coming about. Which was this sect? Which sect was responsible for this innovation entering into the Ummah and being put upon the Ummah? The Mu'tazila. The Mu'tazila. Shaykh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, rahimahullah, he summarized this debate into three stages. Who can remember the first stage of this debate? He summarized. What was the first sort of level of this debate? Or the first point of this debate? Al-ilm, knowledge. He debated with him, Ibn Abi Duwad, on the basis of knowledge. I mean, this innovation that you came with, saying that the Qur'an is created, was this something which Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and the Khulafa who came after him had knowledge of, or they didn't have knowledge of it? So if he were to say no, they didn't have knowledge of it, what would that necessitate? He posed a very good question to him. If he were to answer no, they didn't know it, what would that mean? Yeah. It would be an accusation against them, against the Prophet and against the Khulafa al-Rashideen after him, of ignorance. That one of the most important things of the religion, this man knew it, but they didn't know it. So it would be an accusation against them of ignorance. And that was actually his first answer, if you remember. He said, they didn't know it. So how did he respond to that when he said they didn't know it? Then he moved on to the next level in the debate, which was what? What was his answer when he said they did not know it?
Then Imam replied to him that something that they didn't know, how can you come to know?
Yeah. That's something which they didn't know. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his Khulafa, the best of the Muslims coming after him, they didn't know it. How on earth have you come to know it? How did you come to know it? So then he changed his answer and said that they did know it. Okay, they did know it then. So how did the Imam respond to that? So okay, they did know it then. It's something which I'm upon, something which they knew. Who can remember how he responded to that?
So he said, why didn't they explain it to the people?
Yeah. Was it correct in that case if they knew it? And it's so important, major matter of aqeedah. So important that you call the people to it, you force the people to accept it, make it a fundamental of the religion. Was it possible for them to keep quiet about it? If they knew it? So he destroyed his argument with that. And by saying, of course, that if it was sufficient for them to be quiet about it, why isn't it sufficient for you? Why is it not sufficient for you to be quiet about it then, and not call the people to it? We also had a very important point from Shaykh al-Fawzan in the explanation with regard to the texts of the book and the sunnah with regard to Allah's attributes. He made the point that the Salaf, the companions and the Tabi'een, they did not ask questions about these texts. About the texts where Allah's name or Allah's names and attributes are mentioned, they didn't ask about them. They asked questions about other texts, many other matters for clarification, but they did not ask about the texts of Allah's names and attributes. Why not? Why did they not ask about them? Yeah. Because the book and the sunnah were in the Arabic language, the pure Arabic language, they were Arabs, they understood their language perfectly well, and the texts were perfectly clear to them, the meaning of these texts were perfectly clear to them, so they had no need to ask about them. They only asked about things that were not clear to them. These texts they did not ask about because of their clarity to them. They knew the meaning of these texts. Shaykh al-Fawzan also mentioned a point that with regard to these texts, where Allah's names and attributes are mentioned, for example the ayah from Surah Ash-Shura, لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ وَهُوَ السَّمِيعُ الْبَصِيرُ. There is nothing like Allah, and He is the all-hearing, the all-seeing. Likewise, the companions and the tabi'een, the salaf, they did not find a problem with the ayah. But these days, you find people having a problem with the ayah and saying, doesn't that mean, aren't you saying, doesn't that necessitate such and such? They have a problem with the like of these ayahs. Why did the companions and the salaf not have any problem at all with these ayahs? These ayahs mentioning attributes for the Creator. Yeah. Because, as the brother mentioned correctly, that they realize that affirming Allah's attributes does not in any way mean declaring likeness with the creation. Affirming an attribute for Allah doesn't mean any likeness with the creation, because they knew perfectly well that the attributes of the Creator are perfect attributes as befit Him, not like the attributes of His creation. Not like the attributes of His creation. So there's no resemblance. And with regard to the continuation, then the Imam Ibn Qudama al-Maqdisi, rahimahullah, then he now continues, and he starts bringing actual examples from the attributes of Allah, the Most High. Having, in what preceded, mentioned the principles in that regard, and mentioning some sayings of the Salaf, affirming these principles, now he actually mentions some of the attributes. So he begins by saying, فَمِمَّا جَاءَ مِنْ آيَاتِ الصِّفَاتِ قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ. الآيات من سورة الرحمن. He said, so from that which occurs, from the ayahs about the attributes, is His saying, He the Most High, وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ. The ayah from Surah Al-Rahman, the 55th surah, ayah 27, with the explanation and the wajh and the face of your Lord will remain. And just as a small side point, in some other versions of the book, then here where he says قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى, then in the version of Shaykh Al-Uthaymeen and other versions of the book, it mentions qawlullahi ta'ala. Just a slight difference in wording. Instead of saying qawluhu, it says qawlullahi ta'ala, the saying of Allah the Most High. With regard to the explanation of this part, so from that which occurs from the ayahs about the attributes, is his saying He the Most High, وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ, and the face of your Lord will remain. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, having finished explaining the methodology of the Salaf, of the predecessors, with regard to the names of Allah and His attributes, he then began mentioning some examples of texts of the attributes from the book and the sunnah. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan commented upon the ayah with the first of them, قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى and قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ, with the explanation, and the face of your Lord will remain. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so just as there occurs a mention of the attributes of Allah in the Qur'an, then from that there occurs al-wajh, the face, as an attribute which Allah has described Himself with, that He has a face, a wajh. And he quotes the ayah with the ayah before it. كُلُّ مَنْ عَلَيْهَا فَانْ وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ ذُو الْجَلَالِ وَالْإِكْرَامِ, Surah Al-Rahman, 55th Surah, ayahs 26 and 27. With the explanation, everyone upon the earth will perish, and the majestic and noble face of your Lord will remain. Everyone upon the earth will perish, and the majestic and noble face of your Lord will remain. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, this contains affirmation of al-wajh, of the face, for Allah the Perfect and Most High. So the Salaf, the predecessors, they read this ayah and they did not raise any objection to it, and they did not consider it problematic. They affirmed it just as it came. So this proves the obligation of affirming al-wajh, of affirming the face, for Allah the Perfect and Most High. Then he moves on and says, and as for what occurs from the people of dalal, as for what occurs from the people of misguidance, then they said, what is meant by al-wajh, what is meant by the face, is al-dhat. They said, it means Allah's self. لِأَنَّنَا لَوْ أَثْبَتْنَا الْوَجْهَ, there's a spelling mistake here, it says lam, and it should be lau. That they said, what is meant by al-wajh, the face, is actually the self. Because if we were to affirm the face for the Creator, and it is something found in the creation, I mean the creation have faces as well, then that would necessitate resemblance between the Creator and the creation. This is their argument. They say we can't say it means a face because the people have got faces. So if we affirm a face for the Creator, we've caused resemblance with the creation who have got faces. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, high and exalted is Allah above what they say. We say, no, not at all. Affirming the face for Allah does not necessitate resemblance to the face of the creation. Rather, Allah, the Majestic and Most High, has a face which befits His Majesty. And we do not know how it is. We do not know the kayfiyyah. We don't know how it is. And the created beings, each of them has a face which befits it. Then the Imam Ibn Qudama, he brings the next text. وَقَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى بَلْ يَدَاهُ مَبْسُوطَتَانِ Al-Ayah in Surah Al-Ma'idah. And he's saying, He the Most High, and he quotes the ayah from Surah Al-Ma'idah. Fifth Surah, Ayah 64. With the explanation, rather his two hands are outstretched. Rather his two hands, the two hands of Allah the Most High, are outstretched. And again, as a small side point, other versions of the book have here, وَقَوْلُهُ سُبْحَانَهُ Instead of وَقَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى, they have وَقَوْلُهُ سُبْحَانَهُ And his saying, He the Perfect, instead of his saying, He the Most High. With regard to the explanation of this part, and his saying, He the Most High, the ayah from Surah Al-Ma'idah, ayah 64, with the explanation, rather his two hands are outstretched. Shaykh Al-Fawzan, hafidhahullah, he said in explanation, this ayah contains affirmation of Al-Yadayn, contains affirmation of the two hands for Allah, the Majestic and Most High. So when Allah mentioned the saying of the Jews, as here, Shaykh Al-Fawzan, he mentions the context of the ayahs which come before, and the context of this ayah. So he said, Allah having mentioned the saying of the Jews, where he said, وَقَالَتِ الْيَهُودُ يَدُ اللَّهِ مَغْلُولَهُ Surah Al-Ma'idah, the fifth surah, the same ayah, ayah 64, the part of the ayah before this, with the explanation, and the Jews, the Yahud, said, the hand of Allah is closed up from giving. Shaykh Al-Fawzan said, so they describe Allah with bukhl. They describe Allah with miserliness. He the Perfect and Most High. That Allah does not spend, they claim Allah does not spend upon us. So they describe Allah with miserliness. He the Perfect and Most High. So he said, He the Most High said, غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ Rather their hands are tied up from giving. The same ayah, Surah Al-Ma'idah, ayah 64. Rather their hands are tied up. Shaykh Al-Fawzan said, So the Yahud, the Jews, are the most miserly of the people with wealth, and the most eager of the people and most covetous of the people upon gathering wealth. And therefore they gather it from every direction, every source, every direction. Whether it be permissible, halal, or whether it be haram, forbidden. With them, gathering wealth is not limited to whether it be lawful or forbidden. So they make lawful riba, usury, and they make lawful gambling, and they make lawful prostitution, and hiring out prostitutes, and opening brothels for profit. These are characteristics of the Jews. They gather all types of wealth. However, they do not then spend in charity. So they are the most miserly of the people. So this description applies to them. غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ Rather their hands are tied up from giving. They said about Allah, Allah's hands are tied. Allah the Most High responded, غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ Rather it is their hands that are tied. as the Sheikh Fawzan said, so this description truly applies to them. غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ, meaning they have been struck with miserliness. And it doesn't mean that their hands are tied to their necks. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean their hands are tied up to their necks. This is what is meant by it. Al-Bukhul, miserliness. Just as he, the Most High, said, and then Shaykh al-Fawzan gives another ayah to make it clear that this is the meaning, this is what it meant. Another ayah with regard to spending in charity. He said, so he, the Most High, said, وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَهُ, with the explanation, and do not make your hand tied up. Do not make your hand tied up from spending. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, meaning with miserliness. Because this ayah that he's mentioning here from Surah Al-Isra is with regard to giving in charity. So he's saying here, وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَ, do not make your hand tied up. It says meaning with miserliness. وَلَا تَبْسُطْهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ, Surah Al-Isra, the same ayah, 17th surah, ayah 29. And do not open it up completely in spending. The Shaykh said, meaning extravagance in spending. So this ayah from Surah Al-Isra makes it clear here that what's meant by a hand being maghloola here, or the hand being mabsuta, opened up, is with regard to spending. So the ayah about the Jews means that hands are tied up, meaning that they are miserly. It doesn't literally mean their hands are tied to their necks. So Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so withholding spending in charity is bukhul, is miserliness, and is having the hand closed up. And al-bast, opening the hand in spending, totally opening the hand in spending, here it means exorbitance, extravagance. And he quotes the complete ayah, وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَةً إِلَىٰ عُنُكِكَ وَلَا تَبْسُطْهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ فَتَقْعُدَ مَلُومًا مَحْصُورًا. The same ayah, Surah Al-Isra, 17th surah, ayah 29, with the explanation, and do not make your hand tied to your neck, and do not open it up totally, so that you become blameworthy and in severe poverty. And he quotes a further ayah to show what is meant here in this ayah. This was with regard to spending in charity. He said, وَالَّذِينَ إِذَا أَنْفَقُوا لَمْ يُسْرِفُوا وَلَمْ يَقْتُرُوا وَكَانَ بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ قَوَامًا. Surah Al-Furqan, 25th surah, ayah 67, with the explanation, and those people, those believers, are those who when they spend in charity, they are neither extravagant, go overboard, nor are they miserly, but rather they take a medium way between that. Then he quotes the continuation of the ayah that came before about the Jews having now explained what is meant by the Jews having their hands, غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ, their hands tied up, meaning miserliness. And he carries on with the rest of the ayah, وَلُؤِنُوا بِمَا قَالُوا, Surah Al-Ma'idah, 5th surah, ayah 64, with the explanation, and they have been cursed for what they said. I mean, they're saying about Allah. They're saying, يَلُوا اللَّهِ مَغْلُولًا, they're saying that Allah's hand is closed up. وَلُؤِنُوا بِمَا قَالُوا, and they have been cursed for what they said. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, Allah has cursed them, لَعَنَهُمُ اللَّهُ, Allah has cursed them because of their belittling Allah, the Perfect and Most High. And al-la'an, curse, means, and here he gives a definition which we've had before, a very important definition of this word, because this word comes a lot, curse. He defines what is a curse, what is a curse here. He said, Al-La'an, curse, هو الطرد والإبعاد عن رحمة الله سبحانه وتعالى. The curse is to be rejected and put at a distance away from the mercy of Allah, the Perfect and Most High. Meaning that when you find in a text that someone's been cursed, that's the meaning of it. They're being rejected away and put at a distance away from the mercy of Allah. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so this shows the vileness of this saying, and Allah's refuge is sought. And then He, the Majestic and Most High, said, in the next ayah, or the continuation of this ayah, بَلْ يَدَاهُ مَبْسُوطَتَانِ يُنْفِقُ كَيْفَ يَشَاءُ. The explanation, rather His two hands are outstretched, He gives however He wishes. Rather His two hands are outstretched, He gives however He wishes. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so all of the created beings, they live upon His fadl, they live upon His favours, He the Perfect, and upon His rizq, they live upon the provision given by Him. All of the created beings, from the cattle, and the humans, and the insects, and all of the created beings, all of them live upon the provision given by Allah, the Perfect and Most High. His hand gives abundantly throughout the night and the day, He the Perfect and Most High. Then he quotes the ayah, وَلِلَّهِ خَزَائِنُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Surah Al-Munafiqun, the 63rd surah, ayah 7, with the explanation, and to Allah belongs the treasure stores of the heavens and the earth. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so everything which the created beings take as food, it is from the provision given by Him and from His favour. And he quotes the ayah, أَمَّنْ هَذَا الَّذِي يَرْزُقُكُمْ إِنْ أَمْسَقَ رِزْقَهُ. Surah Al-Mulk, the 67th surah, ayah 21, with the explanation, who is there that can give you provision if Allah withholds His provision? Who is there that can give you provision if He, Allah, were to withhold His provision? Meaning none can give you any. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so all of the created beings, they live upon the provision given by Him, He the Perfect and Most High. Even the unbelievers, the enemies of Allah, they live upon the provision given by Him, He the Perfect and Most High. بَلْ يَدَاهُ مَبْسُوطَتَانِ يُنْفِقُ كَيْفَ يَشَاءُ. Same ayah, Surah Al-Ma'idah, ayah 64, with explanation again. Rather His two hands are outstretched, He gives however He wishes. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so He described Himself as having two hands, yadayn, as having two hands, and that He gives, He the Perfect, however He wishes. There is no one who can raise an objection to Him, nor prevent Him, nor who can prevent His favour, He the Perfect and Most High. So the witness from the ayah, I mean the witness for what? The attribute that's been mentioned here, the witness is يَدَاهُ يَدَاهُ, His two hands. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so He described Himself with having two hands, just as occurs in the other ayah. Now he mentions another ayah where two hands are affirmed for Allah. مَا مَنَعَكَ أَن تَسْجُدَ لِمَا خَلَقْتُ بِيَدَيَّ. مَا مَنَعَكَ أَن تَسْجُدَ لِمَا خَلَقْتُ بِيَدَيَّ. Surah Sa'd, the 38th surah, ayah 75. With the explanation, Allah the Most High said to Iblis, What prevented you from prostrating to that which I created with my two hands? Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so he created Adam with his two hands, he the perfect and most high. And as for the rest of the created beings, then he created them by his command. He says to something, kun, be, and it is. Things come about by his command, he the perfect. But as for Adam, then Allah created him with his hand, he the perfect. And this gives nobility to Adam alayhi salatu wassalam from amongst the whole of the creation, that Allah created him with his hand, he the majestic and most high. لِمَا خَلَقْتُ بِيَدَيَّ, to that which I created with my two hands. In the address to Iblis, that why did you not make sajda when I commanded you? Why didn't you prostrate when I commanded you? To Adam, whom I created with my two hands. He said, خَلَقْتُ, قَالَ خَلَقْتُ, and there's again a printing error here, خَلَقْتَ, it should be of course be خَلَقْتُ. He said, خَلَقْتُ, I created. And then he said, بِيَدَيَّ, with my two hands. This is a clear statement in affirmation of the two hands of Allah, or a clear statement of affirmation of two hands for Allah, the Perfect and Most High. And as for the people of misguidance, they say what is meant by the hand of Allah is His Qudra, is His ability. Meaning He created him with His ability. That's how people of misguidance explain this ayah. You know, Allah created Adam with His ability. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so they are responded to by the saying that if this were the case, there would not be any special distinction for Adam over anyone else from the created beings. Because all of the created beings were created by the ability of Allah, the Perfect and Most High. That's the first answer. They say this ayah doesn't affirm a literal hand for Allah, but it means Allah's ability. So that's the first answer. Then there will be no special characteristic for Adam, because everything is created by Allah's ability. The second response, he said, is that he said, بِيَدَيَّ, بِيَدَيَّ, with my two hands. So then can it be said, could it be said, with my two abilities? Does Allah have two abilities or a single ability? MashaAllah. Even the children can see the foolishness of it. Can it be said, two abilities? I created him with my two abilities. Does Allah have two abilities or a single ability? He has a single ability. So this shows that he's saying, بِيَدَيَّ, with my two hands, which is in the dual form. The dual form of yad means two real hands. As this is understood from the language meaning, which is well known and sensed. I mean, the meaning of yad in the Arabic language is well known and clear and is sensed, is known. However, we affirm for Allah that which is well known in the language as being yad, as being a hand. Then he makes the important point in addition. However, he has two hands, he the Perfect and Most High, which are particular to him and do not resemble the hands of the creation. So his two hands are as befit him, he the Majestic and Most High. And no one knows their kayfiyyah, no one knows how they are except Allah. And they are not like the hands of the created beings. So they, I mean the people of misguidance, so they negate, they deny for Allah the two hands, for fear of bringing about tashbih, for fear of bringing about resemblance with the creation, they claim. And yet again, this is the reason they give for denying Allah's attributes. They say, because if we affirm this attribute, then we'll be affirming likeness with the creation. So Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so they negate for Allah the two hands, for fear of bringing about resemblance with the creation. So we say, there is no resemblance at all, because there is no resemblance between the two hands of Allah and between the hand of the creation. No, not at all. Rather, resemblance only comes about وَإِنَّمَا يَقَعُ التَّشَابُهُ عِنْدَ مَنْ لَا يَعْقِلْ وَلَا يَفْهَمْ. This extra word again, a printing error here. لَا يَفْهَمْ has been crept into the text here. That's not part of the text. وَإِنَّمَا يَقَعُ التَّشَابُهُ عِنْدَ مَنْ لَا يَعْقِلُ وَلَا يَفْهَمْ كَلَامَ اللَّهِ. That resemblance only comes about for those people who do not comprehend and do not understand the speech of Allah. As for the people of knowledge, then this is not a problem for them. In other words, this claim that they make, look, doesn't that mean resemblance with the creation? Then the answer is no, it does not mean that. It only means it in your minds. Something wrong with your minds. But as for the people of knowledge, it doesn't mean any resemblance with the creation, affirming these attributes. Then with regard to the next attribute that's mentioned, then the saying of the Imam Ibn Qudamah, rahimahullah, وَقَوْلُهُ تَعَالَىٰ إِخْبَارًا عَنْ عِيسَىٰ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ أَنَّهُ قَالَ تَعْلَمُ مَا فِي نَفْسِي وَلَا أَعْلَمُ مَا فِي نَفْسِكَ. Al-Aya in Surah Al-Ma'idah. And he's saying, He the Most High informing about Isa alayhi salam, that he said, and he quotes the ayah from Surah Al-Ma'idah, the fifth surah, ayah 116, you know what is in myself, and I do not know what is in yourself. Isa alayhi salam, he said this to his Lord, you know what is in myself, and I do not know what is in yourself. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, this affirms an-nafs, this affirms the self for Allah the Perfect and Most High. Just as the created person has a nafs, has a soul, تَعْلَمُ مَا فِي نَفْسِي. Isa alayhi salam said, تَعْلَمُ مَا فِي نَفْسِي. You know what is in myself. So Isa alayhi salam was a created being. He has a soul. وَلَا أَعْلَمُ مَا فِي نَفْسِكَ. But I do not know what is in yourself. He said to his Lord, he says to his Lord, and I do not know what is in your nafs, what is in yourself. So Isa alayhi salam, he addressed his Lord, saying that he does not know what is in his self. And Allah did not criticize him, Allah did not criticize him for this, for saying this. So this contains affirmation of an-nafs, the self, for Allah the Most High. And there occurs in another ayah, كَتَبَ رَبُّكُمْ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِهِ الرَّحْمَةِ. Surah Al-An'am, the fifth surah, ayah 54. With the explanation, your Lord has written upon himself, upon his nafs, your Lord has written upon himself, Ar-Rahmah, mercy. Allah has written and made binding upon himself, mercy, to have mercy. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so it contains affirmation of a nafs, the self, for Allah. And the fact that he has a self does not necessitate resemblance of the two selves. Or rather he said, and the fact that the creation, the created person, has a self, does not necessitate resemblance of the two selves, the self of the creator and the self of the creation. The self of Allah, the Majestic and Most High, and the self of the created being at all doesn't necessitate resemblance. And with regard to what will take as the last text and the last item, the last attribute to be affirmed, then the Imam Ibn Qudama rahimahullah continued, وَقَوْلُهُ سُبْحَانَهُ وَجَاءَ رَبُّكَ. And I am Surah Al-Fajr, and his saying, He the Perfect, وَجَاءَ رَبُّكَ, and your Lord will come. The ayah from Surah Al-Fajr, the 89th surah, ayah 22, with the explanation, and your Lord will come. Shaykh al-Fawzan said in explanation of it, this, هذا من صفات الأفعال, this is from the attributes which are actions. This is from those attributes of Allah which are actions. So the face, al-wajh, and al-yadan, the two hands, and an-nafs, the self, the three attributes which have just preceded, they are from the attributes, they are from sifat al-dhat, they are from the attributes of Allah's self. But as for his saying, He the Most High, وَجَاءَ رَبُّكَ, and your Lord will come, this is from the attributes of actions. And this ayah is in the context of a mention of the terrors of the day of resurrection in Surah Al-Fajr, that He the Most High said, كَلَّا, in the rest of the ayah which came before it, or the previous ayah, كَلَّا, no, not at all. Shaykh Fawzan said this word, كَلَّا, is a word to deter and to repel. إِذَا دُكَّتِ الْأَرْضُ دَكَّا دَكَّا. With the explanation, when the earth is pounded and crushed to dust, Shaykh al-Fawzan said, the earth will quake and crumble to dust. Or rather, the earth will quake, and whatever is upon it, from mountains and buildings, will crumble to dust and become a flat, smooth plain. You will not see upon it any crookedness or unevenness. وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْجِبَالِ فَقُلْ يَنْسِفُهَا رَبِّي نَسْفًا فَيَذَرُهَا قَاعًا صَفْصَفًا. Surah Taha, the 21st surah, ayahs 105-106, with the explanation, and they ask you about the mountains, then say, My Lord will pull them out and smash them to dust, and then leave them as a level, smooth plain. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, وَجَاءَ رَبُّكَ, and your Lord will come. He said, He will come with a true and real coming to pass judgment between His servants, He the Perfect and Most High. So this contains affirmation of Al-Majid for Allah. It contains affirmation for Allah of coming. والحمد لله صلى الله على محمد. Then the Imam, he continues with many more ayahs, a few more ayahs from the Book of Allah, and then ayahs established in the Sunnah of Allah's Messenger صلى الله عليه وسلم. So we'll leave what follows till next time, inshaAllah. Any points of clarification?
Surah Taha, the 20th.
Yeah. Second first. Just a correction, I seem to have said that Surah Taha is the 21st surah, and Surah Taha is the 20th surah.
Can that be used also as a proof for the dhat of Allah? Something like that. Yeah.
they mention this, like, they mention this, anyway, these are the means. Because what they mention is what's affirmed in the text is the word nafsiya. But they use the word that to affirm, to refer to the same thing. Allah.